You're listening to Radio Mayapur with the best devotional, meditation, kirtan music, and inspirational podcast. This is Radio Mayapur.
Okay, good morning, everyone. This is Ganga Das, your host for Radio Mayapur. I'm doing the podcast. We're traveling with His Holiness Bhanu Swami in Australia. Today we are in Brisbane, in the house of Medavidas Prabhu, who was born in Chennai, and he's a chartered accountant, and joined in Papua New Guinea in 2005. So welcome to our show, Radio Mayapur, which is a link to your heart. Welcome, Madhavi Prabhu.
Thank you very much, Ganga Prabhu. Thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you with us today. It's raining a little bit in Brisbane, but Australia is a beautiful country, a lot of greens, a lot of nice devotees. And so, Madhavi Prabhu, tell us a little bit about your family, where you grew up, because I know you are from South India, from Chennai maybe?
Yes.
Yes, and you grew up there, and I was in Chennai from 1984 to 1991. I was a temple president there. I never met you at the time. Maybe you already shifted or you were studying. Tell us a little bit about your family.
So, for the first 25 years of my life, I was in Chennai.
Mm-hmm.
So, I come from a family. We are Iyengar, so part of the Sri Sampradaya.
Nice.
So we come from a place. My father's ancestral home is a place called Melpakkam, which is near Kanchivaram.
Nice.
So that's where my father's side is from, and my mother's side is a place called Srivilliputtur, which is the place where Andal
was born. Srivilliputtur.
So mm-hmm. So that's where my mother's
side. It's a beautiful place.
So my nice mother's temple. Side comes from that part of the thing.
So you were very fortunate to born in a family of cultural Vaishnavas, I should say that.
Yes.
How was your childhood?
So my childhood was basically, my recollections of everything was my mom was always, she was a very pious lady. She would do like what we say about offering everything to Krishna.
Wonderful.
My mother would do that exactly. Like
nice.
My father, when he brings home
anything.
His salary, the first thing that she would do is she would take some money. She'll keep all of the money before the Lord. But the first thing that she will spend is she'll take some money and leave it aside for spending it
for
on some
Lord.
Spiritual purpose.
For the Lord.
Yeah. So it might be something that she might get for the Lord or something that we might do to go to a dham or somewhere. We would use it
nice.
For. So she would keep it. And then every day, like the other thing that I always remembered with her was she was very much, every day she used to do all the, like, the prayers for the Lord and
puja.
Puja, like, so we used to have Shaligram at home and
nice.
Like very much different to generally in the Sri Sampradaya, the women don't do anything, but my mother was the one
who
used to do everything.
Wonderful.
Every day. So she used to do, and she used to, again, whenever the first thing when she makes bhoga at home was to offer that
to
the Lord and then only do anything. Like if it is not given to the Lord, it's not
we cannot eat it.
The same thing, anything else, like we used to get new clothes,
offer to the Lord.
It goes on to the altar first before it gets used. So like that. So that's my recollections.
But let me ask you one thing. Your father was wearing this big tilak like this?
Yes.
Yeah, and your mother used to wear
one line red.
Okay, that's beautiful. You were wearing too?
I used to wear.
Okay.
But not every day. But
because you go to school.
School or other things, but on festival days or any other events that in the family or things like that. Yes, we are. Used to wearing that, and so then
but you also participate in big festival, like if you were in Chennai, maybe you go to Parthasarathi temple or
yes.
Which temple you were associated at the time?
We used to go to a lot of different temples.
Okay.
But there was no like, because we lived in a place called Alvar Pret, which is very close to Mylapore.
Yes, yes.
So in Mylapore, there's a Srinivasar temple. That's the temple that we used to generally go more to.
Beautiful temple.
Close by. So that's the one that we used to go to. And also because my aunt used to live right next to the temple. So go and meet her, go to the temple. So that's the thing. But we used to go to the Parthasarathi temple. But in those days, I remember, like, when I was used to living in Chennai with my father, is like virtually every other month we used to go to Tirupati. That was the big, you know, like, think of it, you get on the bus, go, get on the early morning, go to Tirupati, have the darshan, and then come back in the evening.
It's only 125 kilometers, really, far away. So
that's the main thing. And some of my big influences in terms of spirituality also came from my grandfather, who was a teacher. He was a triple pundit in Sanskrit, Hindi, and Tamil. So he knew, and he used to teach and in a school. And therefore, he was a big influence on me learning and reading a lot of books, especially almost all of, like, both the Mahabharata, Ramayana, and also in both the the books in Tamil, as well as he would teach us from Sanskrit as well.
He wanted you to learn Sanskrit,
but I didn't learn, like, structure.
Why you didn't learn? Because you thought it's an old thing, or because you have no opportunity?
I don't know. It's sometimes you are young. And you think that when they're asking you to learn something, sit down and learn, is something that you're already doing it at school and you don't want to come back at home and do it, kind of. But he taught us a lot of things. So he was another big influence in my life.
And he was Periya Swami? Well, what was his title? Because there's Trivedi, no, Chaturvedi. In South India, there is different, yeah?
No, we, like, in South India, we don't have any specific titles like that. But there is his, like, in generally, they are addressed as Acharya.
Acharya, okay.
So for example, my father's father, his name is Thirumala Acharya. So Thirumala plus Acharya.
Acharya is a title. Acharya means one who teaches by his example.
Yeah,
so
the same thing.
Very nice.
The other grandfather, my father's younger brother, he's the one whom I said was a triple pundit, and his name is Vijayaraghavacharya. So the same way. So that's kind of title, you might say.
Let me ask you a funny question, because, you know, I grown up in Europe, in Italy, and, you know, sometimes when you're a child, you want to try all kind of things. Were you, in any time in your life when you were a child, wanted to go and test something material, let's say go to cinema or eat ice cream or go with your friend? I don't know. I'm just asking, because, like, you are growing like other children, but your background is Brahminical training.
Yes, but my father or my family never stopped me from doing any of those things. So I have gone out with my friends.
Okay.
Again, but the thing is that because of the training that I had, even though I know, like, some of my friends use, like, when we were in high school and college and things like that,
they
used to smoke or drink or anything else, and I used to go out with them, but
never tried
anything. Because the thing was, the way in which my father always inculcated that thing in me is, ultimately, you are responsible for the decisions that you
make.
And therefore, he and my father and mother, both of them, they always gave me that thing.
But you had the freedom of choice. So there was no force upon you.
Yes.
So that was a beautiful training, I think.
Yes.
Yeah?
Absolutely. So that...
So you were feeling like, I don't want to give displeasure to my family. If I do these things, they'll be maybe upset if they come to know. Or subconsciously, you feel like it's something I should not try.
Yeah, because this is not good for me.
Right.
It was explained that way. So when you know that it's not good for you, why do it? And also the same thing, as you said, why do something that is against. You're going to earn the displeasure.
So would you say that the culture of South India was never so much influenced, like in North India, for example, because of the invasion of the Muslim and things and people, but South India remained very cultural. because of the influence of the Muslim, did not infiltrate so much, or maybe the culture was so deep rooted inside there.
I think, yes, to a large extent, especially in the Brahminical communities, that culture was very much
strong,
and it was passed on
to the other generation,
generation to generation. So you, even though I would say one thing is, like, when I was doing a lot of things when I was younger, although I didn't understand I did it, and now later on I'm learning what are the reasons that you do those things. So that gave me thing that to understand, oh, why did we do all those things then? So,
right.
And on what is the meaning of so many of the rituals and the festivals and the things that we do? So,
because I guess born in such a family, you learn many things, but maybe there is not deep explanation of why we are doing the puja, why we are worshiping the Lord, why we are not doing this, why we are not doing that, because that's the way they've been trained and they train you.
Yes.
Am I correct?
Exactly. So the only way that I could get more explanation or more detail was that you went and stayed in the ashram of the, like, for example, in our line, we have Andavan Swamigal was our family's, like, the mutt that we followed, and he's the head of that. And then you have to go and stay with him in his mutt.
Like a Gurukul. Yeah, because so he's the teacher trained. And you spend time with him.
So you then make that choice and you stay there.
For how long?
I don't know. That's the thing.
So, you can stay for a few months or you can stay for the whole year?
It's a longer time.
It's a long time.
So and that wasn't something that was generally done. Only a few people really
went
in and did like that.
Because I saw last year, I was in Sri Lanka with my friend Fabio, and we saw there is still Gurukul and there is still the Acharya with maybe 20, 30 children, aged between 10 to 15, 16, like young.
Yeah,
and they learn Vedas and they sit down and they do meditation, they do pranayam, they do yoga, they do chanting of sloka in Sanskrit,
yes,
memorize everything. So yeah. That was beautiful. Good.
Yeah, it was a nice thing. And although some of those aspects I did get to experience through my family itself.
Of course.
And the point was that the answer to that was you have to make that choice of, okay, you are dedicating yourself
to
the spiritual path and you're willing to spend that time.
Yeah,
over there. So then you would learn more and probably get more answers.
Also, because I think the teacher who is not your father, so he's willing to straighten you up if you go off. Maybe your father's sentiment is, oh, he's my son. So that's why the sometimes they say that two sages or acharya, they have sons, but each one will send it to the other one to learn. They would not train their own son because of sentiment. And also they can see the children. If you treat your son in different way, the way you treat the other, that would be not good teaching.
Yes,
correct?
Absolutely.
But now let me ask you another question. Now, how far in the modern time, we are in 2024, how far this tradition is also passing on this culture to their son? To how far extended you can, because I see many people, they are going studying all over the world. They're trying. You yourself are an example. You are a chartered accountant and you are now living in Australia. But of course, you're following the culture. But how many people they are actually transmitting this to their children?
Just based on people that I know, like my cousins or friends that I know who are living outside, who were born in Brahmin families and who were exposed to this culture. What I see is there's a huge reduction.
Reduction, yes.
In that. There are very few
who
want to make this culture and spirituality a part of the lives of their children.
That means at one point there's a compromise between spiritual and material life. Would you say that?
See, for them, what they feel is if the child gets more fixed in a spiritual life, they feel that they might give up everything else.
Material, yeah.
So that's the kind of fear that they have. But
they think it's not success.
Yeah, especially that I see that after coming to Krishna consciousness and being here and understanding our philosophy and seeing how we, like, especially we train children and how we give them both the spiritual education as well as the material education
goes on side by side.
I feel, I think, that's a very nice way that that's happening. And part of what I do here in Brisbane is to assist my wife. She runs a Sunday school. So when and the Sunday school, whilst we get a mix of both children who are from devotee parents and children who come from outside. And those who come from outside, and their main thing is they are saying, oh, we want our children to have this culture.
Education. Nice.
Again, whilst it's a minority of the overall population, but those who want it, they want that. And they see that that is very much required for them. And therefore, when they see that, okay, Monday to Friday, they are out in the other school, normal school learning, but at least on the Sunday, they're spending a couple of hours doing this. And in that, they are feeling the comfort that we are in touch with our culture.
That's very important, I think, because the children will have some kind of measurement, understanding in their head, okay, this is material and this is spiritual, which are both essential for being successful. You have good foundation spiritually, and you can face any situation in the material world and tackle with that. And
absolutely, I feel like when the child is situated well spiritually, actually a lot of those qualities that are required for your spiritual growth are also qualities that you can help in your material side as
absolutely
well.
Absolutely,
and then that way, the person who has got both of those together actually shines across both sides. It's not that those things which help him to cultivate his spiritual aspect actually diminish.
No,
it's enriching that life.
In fact, in the Vedas mentioned that once you learn, just like the track of the train or the tram, both spiritual and material knowledge, so that one can distinguish and make the choices in their life. Now, but at what time you say that you joined in 2005 in Papua New Guinea, how you get exposed to the devotees? Tell us the story, how you first meet the devotees.
Okay. So I moved to Papua New Guinea in 1996 because my uncle was there.
Okay.
And he got me a job there. So I went there just to explore. Didn't know what I was, what it is. I just went there to explore. And after a few years there, I got married, and our son was born in 2000. And that's when it started to feel, even though when I went there in 1996, because of some of the background that I had, one of the things that I got automatically into was there was this group of people who used to read Bhagavad Gita commentaries from different authors.
Nice.
And that's where I was first exposed to Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is.
Wonderful.
And that was, I could say, the first coming in touch with Krishna consciousness.
Reconnection.
That was the first thing. Then after our son was born, one of the things that we were thinking as a family was, okay, back in India, when we were born, we were doing things. We had the extended family to give us that knowledge and give us that exposure into our culture, make us grounded in it. How is it that we are going to give it for our child? How do we do it? And certainly Papua New Guinea was not, there was no temples, there was nothing. We had little small satsangs where we did some things, but
not much.
And it was certainly not at a level which it would feed for information for a small child. Certainly.
Right.
So that's when a little bit of thought process came in. And I suppose in those thought process, as Krishna always says, like we see Krishna, Krishna reciprocates. And so around that time, same time, we had devotees from Brisbane. At that time, Tirtharaj Prabhu was the president of the Brisbane Temple, and he used to come to Papua New Guinea for some work-related things. And so that was our, again, first exposure to devotees as such.
Yeah.
And one of the things was, Tirtharaj Prabhu, of course, he's a Western body. And for us to hear the philosophy so eloquently speaking and connecting
from
with
a foreigner.
Foreigners was like, you're like astounded at that point of time.
And he's a very enthusiastic person and very attractive and charismatic also, I should say.
Yes.
I know him for many, many years. Nice devotee.
Yeah, so that was through him was the first introduction more into, and he used to come regularly, like once every quarter or something like that. And whenever he used to come, he used to give classes, we used to talk a little bit. So that kind of
association
set that basis. And then in 2005 was the first time His Holiness Vedavyasa Priya Maharaj, he came there.
Nice.
So he came there, and then by the first time was he was having a program at one of our friends' places. And we said, okay, he's a sannyasi.
We should go and see
him. Yeah, like we should go and see him. We should go and do some, like pay at least our respects to him. That's the thing. That's the culture. So we went there. We heard him first time. And then luckily for us, I think that was 2004 and 5, first 2 years when he came. He was staying in somebody else's house. We just went and heard from him. But we were also taken in, again, by his classes. He's very erudite. But also he used to travel with his Radha Shamsundar deities. And so one day we were like looking at how meticulously he was serving them and doing things. So like that was another aspect to understanding. And so then in 2006, we had the opportunity of hosting him at our home.
Nice.
And so that additionally brought in more connection.
Close.
And then so that kind of brought that in 2006. And then in 2007, again, Maharaj came. We had the opportunity of hosting him. And then all through that period, Maharaj used to always say, why don't you come to Vrindavan?
Nice.
And so 2007, I had the opportunity to go to work to Europe for some work. And actually, we had planned to spend some time holidaying in Europe. So nice. Did all that. And then we came to
Vrindavan
in 2007, Kartik. And that was like it was like a magic opening up something like a magical world to us.
Like Krishna removed the screen and show you, okay, now this is it. This is Krishna consciousness.
So that was
the first time you went to Vrindavan?
2007, Karthik was the first time we went. We had already started chanting and doing some level of chanting and doing things regularly. We had association of devotees through Maharaj's disciples and others. So we're slowly getting, because those were the times where Papua New Guinea is a relatively
new
country which didn't have that much of other infrastructure. And even then, internet was just coming up at those times. There was not much that we could do. But through devotees, we used to get on CDs, they used to give us
music
and some glasses and everything. So that's how we got it. And we slowly learned. And also through one other thing that happened in that time was through Maharaj's disciples, and I'm his disciple now, so through my godbrothers, they sent us materials of the Bhakti Vriksha materials by disciples of His Holiness Jayapataka Maharaj.
All over the world.
so those came to us, and they told us to start using that to have regular programs.
Step by step, gradual elevation.
So all those things kind of all pulled us all together. And that way, and Maharaj's love and attention, and because he used to spend a week with us.
Nice.
So we used to get a lot of time over there with him and by serving him. And so we got more into Krishna consciousness. So 2005, I say that because that's when I started chanting, kind of.
Yes.
2004, Maharaj came, but I didn't really start chanting until 2005. Again, around that time was the opportunity I had been visiting Australia as well, so meeting devotees and getting and seeing them gave me some amount of that which fixed me up.
So you felt great happiness in your heart by reconnecting with the chanting, with the puja, with the devotional activity. You were brought up with this. But yes. Now at this point, everything like solidified for you. Am I correct?
Yes, absolutely. Like, again, as I said, because I had brought up in a Vaishnava family, so you knew the importance of prayers, you knew the importance of rituals, all those things. And then you see the same things. But the biggest thing for me was you understood why you were doing all of these things. There was a very clear-cut explanation to each of those. And
that went deep in
deeper.
Your understanding.
Yeah, that makes it
makes a difference.
You're
not just doing because our father, our grandfather is doing, but now we know that we're doing this to please the Lord. So
that gave us, and so that's when it happened. And then later in 2008, my wife and I both got initiated by His Holiness Vedavya Spray Maharaj in Papua New Guinea.
The original place.
We're still living there, so we got it. In fact, we were asking Maharaj, you're living in Vrindavan, we would like to get initiated in Vrindavan. And he said, no, I would like you to initiate here so that people understand what initiation is. What does it mean by committing yourself to the process? So that was, that point resonated with us as well.
Wonderful.
And so we actually got initiated in Papua New Guinea, where we stayed another 3 more years there. And by then, our son was getting to 10, 11 years. So whilst we were able to give him some knowledge, get him books to read, get him CDs or other things to watch, all those things were happening. But our main concern at that point of time was when he's budding into this kind of teenage years, he doesn't have his peers around him.
Right. And find himself alone.
Alone. Like he used to come to all our programs and everything.
Naturally.
But that was fine. But we felt that he needed his own peer
association.
Group. So that's when we moved from Papua New Guinea to
Australia. Let me ask you another question, because you went many times back to India and your culture. How the people that you knew from, they know you from when you're a child, and they saw you with a big tilak, now they see you with a small tilak. Do they feel like, oh, you changed your sampradaya, or there was any criticism or any... I don't know,
There wasn't a criticism or things, but there was always the question.
Concern.
What is it
that we
is
didn't
different, or what is it that attracts you more?
Okay, yeah.
That's the question that
all
they
right,
had.
All right.
And for me, the answer was two things. One was Prabhupada's books. And the second thing is just how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu put it, that, okay, dharmartha kama moksha is there, but that itself is not the end in itself. The fifth purushartha of prema is the highest. So that explanation and the exact process that you need to follow to attain that.
Chanting of the only name.
Yeah, that which was set out so clearly for us. I said, thus.
In your sampradaya, they don't have this. They chant Vedas, they chant mantras, but they don't have japa, or they do have japa.
Some people do. There is not, it's not
hard
a common.
Rules.
Yeah. It's not a common.
Because mostly they do puja and they chant and they're going off for everything, something to the deity. So it's very pious. It's devotional service, obviously. But they don't have a system like us. We have to chant a certain amount of meditation on the Lord or something like that. It's slightly different.
Yes, it is. It is. That's what, there is not the compulsion to chant the minimum number of rounds or not to chant a particular mantra.
But for example, every morning they listen to Vishnu Sahasranam.
Yes.
Right? This is normal. Yes. Or they chant Tirupalai.
Yeah.
Or they chant something, you know?
Yes.
They always hear there's something connected to the Lord.
So like being brought up, the things that I always remember is almost practically every day you hear the Suprabhadam, the first
Suprabhadam.
Thing in the morning.
Beautiful.
Then obviously Tirupavai during the term of Margari, which is like December 15th to January 15th.
Correct.
Around that time.
Margari.
So that one. And then you hear from Divya Prabandham, which
is... Divya Prabandham is beautiful.
Is all shlokas or glorification of the Lord sung by the 12 Alvars that are there.
That is in Tamil.
That is in Tamil.
And also, I remember they make two line of Brahmin and one chanting one side and they respond on the other side. Am I correct?
Yes.
But you could understand the Divya Prabandham, for example, is very ancient.
It's a higher standard of Tamil.
Literary Tamil.
Literary Tamil, which is different to
like
the spoken.
Poetic type?
It is, I would say, older Tamil kind of.
But you can understand?
Some parts of it. Even though I know Tamil to a fair extent, I won't be able to break down every bit of it properly. I can give you the basic meaning of it, but not into the deeper meanings that a person who is knowledgeable in that would be able to do.
But those are beautiful prayers.
Beautiful prayers.
Very personal prayers of devotee for the Lord.
Yes, because
explaining
that's
the pastimes of Vishnu.
Yeah, everything. Because again, in Sri Sampradaya, you've got the 108 Divya Desham. So
self-manifested deity.
Mostly,
yes.
And therefore, these Alvars have gone to each of those places.
Yes.
And they have sung about the Lord over there. So you get to know about each and every deity that is there. So it's a beautiful, those are very nice. And I still, when I get a chance to read or do, I do have a chance, I do look at it and I feel the connection to it. But the point is, after coming to Krishna consciousness, I still feel that Krishna was so kind enough to give us that extra bit that we would not have otherwise seen.
Yes, yes.
Like, I would have certainly learned about the Lord. I would have probably, given my inclination, maybe I would have done a lot of learned how to do the rituals and other things. Yes. But for me, that depth of our philosophy and how our acharyas have described all of it, that is like, it's like a storehouse of knowledge that I can't even compare it to anything else.
Right. Also, I want to ask you one more question, because in our movement we do emphasize a lot of preaching and chanting the holy name. Now, in that Sampradaya, in Sri Sampradaya, do they preach?
It has not been a strong point of the Sri Sampradaya, or most of the Sampradayas that I generally know. They take it more as a personal initiative.
Okay, if somebody's
interested, they do it and they learn it. And then and usually these days what I see is you find devotees coming together and doing things and encouraging others to do in that way. But there is not, I haven't still not come across deep discussions or things like that. Maybe probably because I'm not in those kind of circles I'm not so sure. But I find we do a lot more in our sampradaya, in our, especially within the known devotees that I know, we get to discuss and relish in the various scriptures that are there, the commentaries of the acharyas and so many things.
But there is one acharya who is preaching a lot, taking groups to Vrindavan, Velakudi.
Yeah, Velakudi.
Vaidyanathan, what's his name?
Velakudi, I think Velakudi. Krishnan, I think. Velakudi is the
He's the preacher. He gives lectures. Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah, he talks. So, see, there have been these few people like him who do that.
Yeah.
So what they call like Harikatha. So they talk about
Krishna.
And Krishna or Rama or Krishna's various forms and everything. They explain about that. But those are very few.
Yes.
But those, it is the way in which I see the difference is, those people are not for attracting others or getting them to understand that Krishna is the highest and
to worship him.
To worship him is the best. Their things are more for the people
who are already in the Sampradaya.
And getting to explain something more to them, which is very good. But
maintaining their culture.
It's not
for outsiders. Yeah, because they will not understand the level it speaks also.
Yes.
Of course, obviously. Madhavi Prabhu, I want to ask another question, because you are very successful chartered accountant. You work in here, you have a nice house, nice family. Now, how you balance both? You are successful materially, you are successful spiritually, which is the perfection of human life, I would say. Everybody is aspiring for this. Means, you know, how you are able to balance both in such a way that you are able to maintain your Krishna consciousness, at the same time maintain your activity to maintain and live in this world.
I would say it's the blessings of devotees and Krishna and Guru. That's the thing. Because luckily for me, in different phases of my Krishna conscious life, things have worked out in that way. So when we used to stay in Papua New Guinea, the advantage was because of the positions that I used to have. So I had a lot of other help in terms of maintaining the house, taking care of children and other things. We were in a position to get all the help that we needed. Yeah. So there, that meant that we could then utilize that extra time in doing Krishna conscious activities. And because that was the time that we had just started, so that actually helped us to become more fixed and understand it better. And that gave me that. And as I continued doing activities in Krishna consciousness, especially after coming to Australia, I was able to see how many varieties of ways in which you could serve Krishna.
Unlimited.
Yeah. Because when you are, like, when we were in Papua New Guinea, we were very we were in touch with devotees, we knew things, but that was very much limited. like limited, and our thoughts and ideas were more probably restricted to what we understood of it.
Naturally.
Whereas when we came to Australia and then we saw that, it blew open so many things. Yeah, we see so many things. Like when I first came here for the first few months, I didn't have any work, didn't have anything to do. So somebody was doing some book distribution. So we went with them to do some book distribution. We went over, there used to be obviously the Saturday feast used to happen in the temple, the Sunday feast used to happen in our restaurant. So go and help, do something. And then devotees in the temple then taught us and then gave us opportunity to serve the Lord as pujaris over there. So that was nice. And then you then learned and then you studied and then you had the opportunity to use that knowledge that you've gained in helping others.
Wonderful.
So it gave us a lot more opportunities. And all of this came. And with this, one of the things that I did understand was we need to draw a line as to exactly how much we want.
Absolutely.
In both sides.
Both spiritual and material. Means you should know your limit or something.
Yeah, like, especially, I can't do what I am doing today 20 years ago. Tried to do that 20 years ago,
that would be defeating.
Yeah, it wouldn't work in that family environment. I had small child. Yes. I was nascent in that time, but even in assuming that I had the knowledge, but if I was to spend a lot of my time on doing other things other than doing things
you
with my family.
You would look like irresponsible.
Yeah. So we need to know what our responsibilities are. We need to know where our attention needs to be at particular phases of our life. And of course, with the changing phases, we also need to see the changes that we need to do.
Absolutely.
Because ultimately, we know our goal. So if our goal is to be 100% dedicated to Krishna, unless we keep changing that
you are not
percentage
evolved.
Of
you
that.
You have to evolve.
Yeah. You have to become a better version of what
always,
you were.
Always.
Keep
improving
doing that.
Every day.
Start doing it. So that's the thing. And what I felt was that as we aspire to do more, there is always opportunities that open up. And there is always the reciprocation that you get.
The Lord. The Lord empower you to do more.
Yes, both ways. You want to do more, Krishna sends more opportunity. So it's that, but we need to make sure that we are not doing something at a cost of not looking after our families, looking after our responsibilities. And again, the thing is that as we get more mature, we should also change our work style to reflect that maturity.
Absolutely.
And then that balance comes through. Because if generally everybody wants to be the topmost person in whatever field they are, that's great. But if you are the topmost person in that field, then if how much of time am I going to spend on that?
Yes, yes. I was thinking the same thing.
How much time do you have for maintaining your Krishna conscious life? That's going to be the difficulty. So, yes, if you want to be that, that's great. But ensure that you can do your minimum, which is your chanting and your regulated principles, at least. So if you can maintain that, that's great. Devotee community is made up of many varieties of devotees
from all stratas in life, we should say, from top to bottom, everybody's in there.
Everybody. And also in spiritual life, you've got the devotee community consists of people at different levels.
Of course.
So we don't need to compare ourselves to anybody.
No.
We need to make sure that what works for us, we need to make that choice.
Not only that, I would say also that we need to appreciate everybody. Because from whatever level they are, each one is struggling to improve himself. And whatever level they are, we should appreciate that they're trying. There are millions of people who don't care about anything spiritual.
The thing is that any devotee who's trying is better than someone who is not trying at
correct,
all.
Correct.
So certainly there is that to be appreciated. And the one thing that I've always understood through my years in Krishna consciousness is you never judge anybody for whatever they are doing.
Absolutely.
Because we are never in their shoes. So whatever they are able to do, we should appreciate them for what they are doing, and we should inspire them to do more.
Of course.
And
if somebody asks us, Prabhuji, how can I improve in doing this? Then we may be able to give advice because we are maybe experienced. But if we don't know, we say, look, I don't know. But let me ask you, Madhavi Prabhu, in your spiritual life, was there any time you had any hurdle or kind of you had to surrender and say, I don't know how to do this? I don't know, everybody goes up and down sometimes, as usual. So was there any way you find it difficult to follow Krishna consciousness?
It happens because two or three things. Because we set expectations, even of ourselves.
Yes.
Of what is to be done. Or how does this thing have to work out? And then that causes. So there have been situations where I thought that this is the way things are going to work out, and then you up in your head along pushing it out, and then it doesn't happen.
It doesn't work.
But then slowly, like over time, I've understood that, okay, you put in the effort, but if it doesn't work out, then you have to allow for it, because sometimes it's time.
Yes.
At a different point of time, the same thing will work out.
Yeah.
Or sometimes that is not the path that Krishna is leading you to. So leave it to Krishna and do it. So there have been situations, and even in my own spiritual life has been a lot of just reflecting back to my early days in Krishna consciousness. I don't know. I feel the enthusiasm that I had then was much not higher or lower, but the intensity of that enthusiasm then was higher,
Of course, it's natural.
But then the thing is that now is not only, then it was primarily what you were doing.
Correct.
At this point is, okay, what I am doing, plus what else can I do to help others?
Correct.
So that, therefore, the balance, again, within that, the balancing needs to be there, because you cannot ignore your own activities and sadhana with helping others. You can't do that at the cost of that. So,
and let me tell you, I think this is a very important point, because everybody has to find his own balance.
Yes.
What worked for you, maybe not work for me. What worked for me, maybe doesn't work for anybody else. So each one is, that's why it's called, I think, signs of self-realization means we are becoming introspective. In that connection with the Lord, we ask His blessing and the Vaishnavas to find the fine balance. So that's very important. So Madhavi Prabhu, it's been a great pleasure talking to you. There is any parting message you want to give to our people who are listening this Radio Mayapur from all over the world? What is a message you want to give to everybody today?
The message that I always have is, first and foremost, is that we need to understand our relationship with Krishna is there. But alongside that, we have a relationship with Srila Prabhupada.
Absolutely.
That is another aspect that we need to understand and cultivate. And I find that that's enriched me a lot.
Of course.
And that's helped me stay course a lot of time. Because you come across different situations in your communities, in your things. But if we have that connection to Srila Prabhupada, that can be our guiding goal always. And that's, so the one thing that I would ask everyone is to develop that relationship with Prabhupada. And for that, one thing that is here is, like, we are at a stage where a lot of Prabhupada's disciples who were there with him and who were there expanding the Krishna consciousness movement, they are all coming to their final chapters in their pastimes on this earth.
Yes.
So take advantage of that.
Absolutely.
Because they can teach us a lot.
So much.
Because they were doing things where nothing existed. We are in a system, like we are coming in at a time of privilege when something has already been established.
Temple already built, congregation already built.
You come in to do a service. Okay, that's great. But that's something that we can learn. Because whenever I look at all of those disciples, whatever they've done, is what I see is two things. First is their total belief in Srila Prabhupada's words.
Dedicated people.
They if Prabhupada said something, they were willing
to
do it.
Against all odds.
Whatever it is. They never even, like, even though they might have sometimes have self-doubts about their own capability, they just said, okay, Prabhupada wants saying, it.
Let's do it.
The first thing. And the second thing that I always see is, even at this age, they want to do more for Prabhupada. That is something
wonderful.
That is really wonderful, because that is something that we need to cultivate.
Absolutely.
That aspect that I want to do something for pushing this movement further.
So the mission of Srila Prabhupada to make everybody happy, create a family where everybody can live in.
Yes.
Madhavi Prabhu, I can talk to you for an hour. I thank you very much for spending your valuable time with us in Radio Mayapur, and I hope to be again with you sometime when you come to Mayapur.
Sure.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Ganga Prabhu. It's always been a pleasure meeting you, and always been a pleasure having your association. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thank you to all viewers of Mayapur Radio who will be putting in their time to hear whatever little that I had to say. Hopefully I've said the right things, but if there's something incorrect...
You know, everybody has a different story, but the important thing is to share the story with others so people can learn and get inspired. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Srila Prabhupada
Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.
Thanks.
You're listening to Radio Mayapur with the best devotional, meditation, kirtan music, and inspirational podcast. This is Radio Mayapur.